The Gavel and the Gavel. It's me, Harry, and I am joined by...
It's me, Simon.
So Windsor Auctions and Lime Bay Auctions unite again to have a chit-chat about all sorts of things. Actually, we're not going to do any talking, are we, really? Because we've invited back one of our most popular guests.
We are delighted to have back on Jamie from Rooster Records. For anybody that doesn't know, Rooster Records, a legendary independent vinyl record store in Exeter, run by the magnificent and hugely knowledgeable Jamie. And he is now going to tell us about the entire market, isn't he, Harry? The entire market of vinyl and records.
I'm hoping so. Here he is. We are privileged to be welcoming back one of our most successful and most popular guests on a topic that got everybody nattering. It's Jamie from Rooster Records. Thank you so much for spending the time and making time to come back and join us, Jamie. We've got 1,000 questions for you.
Pleasure to be back.
Excellent stuff. Excellent stuff.
Jamie, thank you so much for taking the time. We know you're a busy, busy, busy man with Rooster Records in Exeter and all over the country. So we just wanted to get you back on. As Harry said, it was such a well-received podcast. There is such clearly a huge amount of excitement about vinyl, about records, but it must be, it's got to be going on, what, 10, 12 months since we did that episode. So how do you think things are changing? How's the market? You know, what's happening from your perspective in the world of records and vinyl?
Everything is on the up, including, dare I say, cassettes. In fact, my next job is to get all the cassettes out of the storeroom and the storage units and convert one of the units into cassettes, because I'm getting asked for cassettes 10 times a day. So that's on the up.
Hold on just there, because Harry and I are doing house clearances, and I can just tell you, we are binning these like they've gone out of fashion, so we just need to hold on there.
I'm just turning my phone back on to text the people on a job tomorrow morning. Do not throw out the cassettes.
Jamie needs
Jamie
cassettes.
Says,
Jamie keep says, stop.
Cassettes.
I know, I don't need any more of them.
So obviously...
I bought hundreds the other day, and I was like, I don't want any more.
What should we be looking for in the cassette genre? What's driving this? Obviously demand, but why?
I think it's mostly teenagers. It's the whole retro thing. A lot of them, yeah, Stranger Things. Yeah, the hit TV program on Netflix or whatever it's on. That showed teenagers, 20-somethings, using cassette Walkmans. So it suddenly became a very hip and trendy thing to do. To have cassettes as your main source of music listening. And you have to remember that in the late 80s, even early 90s, cassettes were the biggest selling format on the planet, which is really weird to sort of think back and think, wow, was there ever a time when the cassette was the biggest selling format for music? But it was, because vinyl was being phased out, CD was being phased in, but somewhere in the middle, as like a bridging loan, was the good old cassette. And it was hanging in there for some time before people really, really got onto CDs. So it's always been there. And although it completely died a death for 20 years, it's come back in the last few years. And teenagers especially want to own cassettes. Half the time they don't even have anything to play them on. But they just like the idea of having something on cassette.
I'm assuming that this will create a spike in Bic pens. Because I'm imagining that not many teenagers have had to have sat and wound back up their cassette with a good hexagonal Bic pen. So I'm thinking we've got...
I'm going to have to tell them all that, aren't I?
Simon and I have worked together for far too long. Both of us are trying to crack the same gag at the same time.
that's a good pointer, actually. I'm going to have to get a set of Bic pens in from the stationers.
You're going to have
every
one of
them. I'm going to wave one at them and say, you're going to need one of these guys.
And that's going to be great, because the teenager is going to look at you completely bemused as you try and sell them a Bic pen. And you're just going to say, with a wise old head, like an old owl, you're going to say, trust me, you're going to need this.
Yep.
Yeah, you're fantastic. So are there...
Not just to write out your mixtape, but to actually use it.
Oh, your mixtape. Oh, come on. Are they making a comeback? Oh, I love it. Well, I love
are.
It.
They are. This is what they say they want to do. They want to make a mixtape. They want to just join in the whole retro fun thing.
And so, Jamie, the teenagers that are obviously driving this trend, can you buy a new Walkman? Does Sony and other brands, I'm sure, do exist? I mean, or have they now got to go and buy a retro? If they've got to find an old Walkman to play the cassettes on?
Yeah, good luck with that. Finding one that works. Finding one that hasn't got a head that's completely clogged up in cassette gunk. I guess you can still buy them new. I haven't actually looked into it, but I'd imagine a quick search on Amazon would reveal some new model for cassettes. Yeah, surely. Otherwise, what do you play them on? But, I mean, I picked up a Nakamichi cassette player in a record collection a few years ago. And it was loads of hi-fi that came with the collection. And at the time, I just saw this cassette player and I just thought, well, I'm never going to need that. So it went in my lockup. And then to my amazement, somebody mentioned it in the shop recently and they said, oh, they're looking, have I got any cassettes? And this was a middle-aged guy. And I said, blah, blah, blah. No, I'm hoping to get them out for the 100th time. And he said, well, I've got a Nakamichi cassette player at home and I really want to use it because it's a really high-end piece of kit. I said, oh, really? I've got one of those in my lockup. And he bit my arm. He said, oh, I'm looking for another one. I really want another Nakamichi cassette player. I said, really? I said, are they worth anything? He said, they're worth about £1,000. So people are obviously taking this whole cassette revival thing very seriously.
Hang on, Jamie, could you just spell Nakamichi for me?
I tell you what, dear listeners, you are getting it here. The real trends, where to put your money, where to invest, where the future is. This is what our podcast is all about, is basically bleeding information out of people that really know.
Simon, that is one of the questions we had from a listener, oddly called Jamie. We told people that you were coming on and he wanted to know what he should be, and by the sounds we've partially answered this, which is why I'm bringing up now. What he should be investing his hard-earned pennies, I got the impression he was reasonably young, in now that will going forward. And the tone of his question was, there are people, modern-day artists are releasing vinyl. Is that the stuff he should be buying now to put away that will come up in value? I know this is how long is a piece of string, but it was interesting where he was coming from. Is that the stuff he should be buying or should he be investing in some of the things we were talking about last time?
That's an interesting question, and it's a really tough one to answer because it's a crystal ball collection sort of question. If you're talking about old pressings, then the classics will never go out of fashion. So early pressings of the major artists are always collectible. Beatles never stopped selling. You know, early Stones pressings, condition is really important. You know, David Bowie and things like that. All the Pink Floyd, all the major artists that, you know, you get bored of talking about. They're always collectible and always sellable. One of the most sort of surprising for me things of the last sort of 30 years is early 90s vinyl. Early 90s vinyl has soared in value because hardly any of it was being pressed on vinyl at the time. It was all coming out on CD or cassette. So things like early indie bands, you know, like Blur, Oasis and stuff like that, but even things like Pulp and Suede, all the early indie bands that were pressing stuff on vinyl at that time, but people were buying them on CD, they are shooting up in value a lot, a hell of a lot, and have been for some time. But there are also new pressings of things coming out that come out on limited quantities. And if you know the labels to collect and know the modern small little cottage industry labels that are coming out, and they're pressing some of these things in very limited quantities, and suddenly they sell out on the day of release, and 2 or 3 months down the line, they're 4 or 5 times what they were. So there are people, and it's all cross genres as well. It can be doom metal from Scandinavia. It can be soul funk stuff getting reissued, limited editions. Sometimes it's a new band. Often it's an old rarity that's got a limited reissue. And they fly out, and before you know it, they have quadrupled in value. So it's a really hard one. I've invested quite a lot with some suppliers over the years in something that I think is going to be a real good seller, and then nothing. Nobody wants it. And I stay in my back room. Then 5 years later, I come across them. And then I look them up and they're 10 times what they were worth before. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. It's a really strange one. There's no real logic to it. And it takes an awful lot of time and effort to really get to grips with what's a good investment. But there are some which are tried and tested. Yeah, I mean, you can never go wrong with investing in the classics. But yeah, early indie pressings, really good. And some of the new stuff, if it's maybe Scandinavian death metal and some of that stuff, which even I don't really keep on top of for obvious reasons. Mm.
So it sounds to me like you've got it. It's like most investing, keep your portfolio reasonably broad, but underpin it with a few of the classics and then take a bit of a, pardon the expression, I don't mean something kindly, but a bit of a punt on these smaller releases. And there's more of a chance of a small release going up in value than something more sort of mainstream by the sounds of things. Absolutely.
Okay. It's not perhaps quite so easy now because there's so much vinyl being pressed. I mean, it is just colossal, the amount of stuff being pressed. I mean, the obvious thing to look at is Record Store Day, which is fast approaching again in a few weeks' time, which for reasons I could bore you with, I don't take part in anymore. controversial issue. Record Store Day. Yes, sorry, I assumed you knew about Record Store Day because I work in the industry. I assumed everybody knew about Record Store Day.
No, sorry.
Record Store Day is an annual event dreamed up by the Americans about 15, 20 years ago as a way of releasing special edition pressings on one day of the year that they come out. And record shops, exclusively independent record shops, so not HMV, are able to sell these individual vinyl pressings and they're limited editions. And people queue up all the way down the road to come in on that one day and get them. What's happened over the years is that an awful lot of, as all these things, people have jumped on it for various different reasons. We did it about 10, 12 years ago. We did it. You know, fairly big. I invested quite a lot of money in it. I resisted it for many years because everyone used to go on about Record Store Day and I thought, I don't want to be part of that. And the problem with it is the record companies have now milked it to death. So they will release all manner of things, most of which nobody's really interested in. So there's about 500, 600, 700 titles that get released on vinyl for this day, singles and LPs. And they say they're limited editions. Well, everything is limited. I mean, nothing's infinite when they're pressing. So they say these things are limited and they're very expensive for the record shops to buy in. You can't return any of them afterwards. And of course, people jump in the queue and they get these things and they're on eBay by the end of the day selling for twice as much. It's one big real ball of hype, in my opinion. The record companies coin it in because they sell out of just about everything. And then you have a really good day on the day, you get about half your money back. And then a week later, what you've got left is worth less than you paid for it. So it's really, really good for the record companies. They make an awful lot of money. Record shops take all the chances and don't really make an awful lot.
Sorry, Jamie, are these existing artists putting out new material? Are these new bands putting out new material? Is this re-releases of old material?
All of the above.
Oh, okay. Oh, wow.
It sounds to me like it was started with the best intentions of supporting independent record stores. And as these things are wont to do, it's been hijacked by people who saw an opportunity to make a quick buck, and studio executives have gone, hold on a minute, we can really, really pump out some stuff. Whereas if they did half the amount of stuff and it was proper limited edition, we find this in the auction world all the time. 1,500 or 2,500 or 3,000 is not as limited edition as you think it might be, you know, and that's an issue.
No, they're not.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, they're not particularly limited. They for some reason on the day, everything is 2, 3, 4 times what it would normally cost as an ordinary release. Well, why? It doesn't cost them any more to press it. But they just prey on people feeling like they have to have it. Now, 90% of Record Store Day releases over the years have as much or less value than they had when they came out. Some of them have become collectible, just a few. Some of them have become very collectible. But most of them are no more collectible now than they were on the day they came out. And in fact, people would buy them at inflated prices, especially on eBay. If they didn't get one in the shop that day after queuing up for hours, they would go on eBay, pay four or five times what they should be paying. A month later, they could get it. They could have got it for, you know, less than it was going for on the day. So people do, you know, it's a bit like, it's like a January sale, but they're not getting a bargain. They're queuing up for the hype, really. And it's just something I decided I didn't want to have anything to do with controversially.
That's an interesting insight. And I knew nothing about that day, did you?
No, nothing at all. I find it fascinating. I'm not surprised it's been hijacked. And it's a shame because independent record stores, and I'm not speaking for Jamie, but at times in the cycle of life, have needed that sort of support, you know, that sort of promo. Mm. And therefore, for it to be then hijacked is just a pain in the neck. Because it's, you know, it's a good thing, really. But, you know, as you say, if the record companies are making too much money out of it, the idea was that the record stores get a little boost that sees them through that bad month.
Exactly. It's record store day.
Yeah.
But, you know, how can it be record store day if at the end of it you can't return anything? I mean, often with you know, things you buy from record companies and wholesalers, you can order stuff like pre-sales and things, and you can buy them on sale or return. So if you haven't sold them when the initial rush for that artist, the new release is out, you can return them a month or two later. It's a bit odd and ironic that on record store day, where they charge you two, three times what they would normally charge you for a release, if you don't sell it, you're stuck with it. And if you're stuck with it for a long period, most of them are going to go down in value. And then you really are stuck with them. And I've still got several boxes full of stuff from when I did Record Store Day 10 years ago. Duplicates, triplicates of things that are still worth less than they were, you know, when I bought them. So I don't want to do it again, no.
I can see where the slight touch of anger is coming from.
And on the Record Store Day, you get loads of people coming to the door saying, where's all your Record Store Day stuff? And you just you say to them, oh, sorry, we don't do Record Store Day. We don't participate. And they look really miffed. They turn around and they go out. And I'm like, well, we're a record shop. If you're interested in buying vinyl, surely while you're here, you should look around. And there are always people you've never seen before, and they don't even bother coming in. So you think, well, if that's the kind of customer that jumps on it just so they can stick it on eBay and make a quick buck, I don't want to be part of it. Sorry, I'm dampening the conversation.
No.
I'm
all in.
Help.
I'm all in. I love that sort of stuff. I love it.
Hang on.
I want an opinion.
Hang on. I'm going to help bring it back up, Jamie. I've got you. I'm going to help bring it back up because I did a teeny tiny bit of research. I'm not famed for my research, but
No kidding.
Yeah, but Jamie's special. What can I say? That's going to get me in trouble with all the
Yeah, I was about to say.
I don't know why I did that.
Yeah, carry on.
Sake, just to carry favour for a few seconds. So Music Week put some stats out in January to say that in December 23, the vinyl market was up 11.7% based on an increase of 2.9% the year before. Now, by any metrics, that's pretty colossal, Jamie. There is no ebb whatsoever in this boom for vinyl. I mean, to go from 2.9% growth across the board to 11.7, that's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah. I'd like to say I saw it coming, but I think it's just good fortune that, you know, I was in an industry that was dying a death, apart from just, you know, record collectors and anoraks. And then suddenly it's just become enormously, you know, sellable stuff. And it's across the ages. I mean, it's 8 to 80.
Well, it's interesting that you say that because I was also looking at the official top 40 best-selling vinyl albums of 2023. Now,
yep. Rumours would have been number one, probably.
No. Number one, Taylor Swift.
What?
Oh, yeah, well, that would have been my second
on vinyl.
Oh, yeah. But hang on. Let's turn this into a pop quiz. I'm liking this.
Oh, God.
Number one, Taylor Swift. Number two, who do we reckon?
Taylor Swift. Number two.
You've mentioned them already on this podcast.
Fleetwood Mac.
Rolling Stones.
Well, yes, I suppose, because they had the new Hackney Diamonds LP out.
Hackney Diamonds, that's exactly who it is, yeah. Then we've got Lana Del Rey. Then we've got Taylor Swift again.
That's going to be my next thing to say, yeah, Lana Del Rey.
But then we've got two classics. Any guesses?
Rumours.
Rumours, spot on, number five. And then the next one?
Dark Side of the Moon.
Ah, oh, come on, the man's a legend. Yeah, 100%. Brilliant. Well done, Jamie. I apologise, Jamie, because I set you up badly for that, but you've come through with flying colours for our listeners. So I do apologise for that. I did not brief you up front. But even so, doesn't that show, I mean, what a mix of a top 40 that it, Lana Del Rey, you've got the Beatles in there, you've got the Rolling Stones in there, you've got Fleetwood Mac. Yep. I mean, that really is a boom.
What it's showing me is that Taylor Swift can do anything she wants and they'll buy it.
Pretty much. Yeah, yeah. I got a chunk of her vinyl in a couple of weeks ago. I thought, oh, you know, I ought to get some in the racks. And they've all gone already. So, but I could probably tell you what was in that top 40. I'm not going to, but it, because I get people coming in with their lists now on their phone. They don't have handwritten lists anymore. The older generation have handwritten lists of things to sell. The younger generation have handwritten phone lists to buy.
Go on, pick me a few others, because I find this list absolutely amazing. Go on.
Well, they tend to ask for exactly the same things. So all the ones we've mentioned.
Yeah.
If they're retro albums, Graceland will be in there. Dark Side of the Moon, Graceland, Parallel Lines.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. The Queen is Dead, Smiths, Cure, Depeche Mode. These are all the biggest selling artists I get asked for at the moment. So Oasis never stopped selling.
Yeah. Oasis, yeah.
So it's all the major artists, but I still get asked for Beatles. I still get asked for the Stones. I have sections for all these major artists because it's easier just to point people to them. But it's also things like... David Bowie never stops selling. So, and it's not just a certain artist; it's individual albums within that artist. So, Lou Reed, Transformer, that's the one they want. You know, it's not, in my opinion, it's not even his best album, but that's the one they want. So, sometimes it's a particular artist, but they will want that album by that artist, like Graceland, Paul Simon. Again, I don't even think it's a great album, but it's not his best album. But they are, no, I want Graceland. I don't want any of the others. It's got to be Graceland. So, you know, yeah, Queen, Night at the Opera. I want Night at the Opera. I don't want any of the others.
But, Jamie, what I want to know is when they're saying that to you and you say, can I have Graceland? And you go, yeah, eighth rack over there, there's 20 of them or whatever it might be. Can you hold yourself back and go, actually, you do know it's not his best album. You should really try this one. I mean, that would be my problem with the whole thing.
I do sometimes, but then you start thinking, well, yeah, okay, I'm a bit privileged because I've been doing this a long time and I get to listen to a lot of music. So you start to feel a bit sort of self-righteous if you start pointing people in directions because that's not right. I mean, music's a very individual thing. But sometimes I do have to sort of grit my teeth and think, oh, you know, it's the whole, there are other records out there. You don't need to just buy these obvious records. There's a whole world of fantastic music out there, but people are very narrow in what they want to listen to. And they're very, very, very led by you know, the media. So if somebody is told something's a good record, I mean, there was an example a few years ago when dear old Ed Sheeran was riding high and, this older guy came into the shop and no kidding. He was in there for probably an hour looking through absolutely everything. And then he worked his way through the CDs as well, came to the sort of new releases CDs at the end. And he plucked out an Ed Sheeran CD and came to the counter. And I said, oh, and this wasn't, he wasn't a young guy. I mean, not that you have to be young to like Ed Sheeran, but he came to the counter and I looked at him thinking maybe he's buying it for his daughter or son, you know, maybe. And he put it down and I opened it up and he said, I thought I'd better see what all the fuss was about. Now, that in a nutshell just said to me, he's following what he's been told. The fuss being media hype, you know, and we all know that media hype sells records. So, you know, people jump on it. It's like the Brit Awards, you know. I mean, the Brit Awards is all about record companies thinking, who can we give a load of awards to so that everybody will go out and buy a load of records by that person? And let's face it, that's what it's about. That's what most award ceremonies are based on. You know, it's record companies sitting down in a room, just a handful of people saying, okay, guys, who's going to be the next big thing? How about that one? How about that one? Okay, let's give them loads of awards. And before you know it, everybody is going, I've got to have that. I've got to listen to that. So, you know, yeah, Ray won heaven only knows how many Brit Awards. And you can't tell me that all the people that have won the Brit Awards over the last few years are our finest musicians. They're not. That's the end of the story. but if you give enough people awards, people are then going to next day all be talking about it, and they're going to go out and buy their records. And it's just, the whole thing is just self-perpetuating. So, you know, I've seen it happen for years and years and years. Sometimes a very worthy artist wins awards, but for me, the whole awards ceremonies and systems and the way they're structured is purely designed for record companies to make an awful killing, because they know that the public are going to buy into it. And I just wish people would sometimes just sort of say, I'm going to find my own heroes.
Now, as you know, Jamie, Harry and I run auction houses. We are getting, let's use proper English, Simon, for goodness sake, before I get told off by the mother-in-law, a lot of vinyl come through the door over the last 6 months, which obviously, as we know, based on the stats, is a good thing. Now, we thought we'd ask you, as the professional, because we are not, we put up a lot of vinyl. We have a bit of a go at sorting it into genres or sorting it into, but we don't know it like you know, or whatever. What would you give as advice to somebody who wants to go to auction, where they can buy a plethora of vinyl that comes from house clearances and customers? So if you were advising somebody who wants to buy vinyl and is thinking about going down the multi and varied auction route, what would you suggest?
Tough one. Yeah, I've bought stuff at auctions before.
I was going to say, please don't say don't.
No, no. Buy it all. Bid furiously. Get your friends to bid as well.
Well done.
No, I've bought stuff at auctions before. The first advice to give is, if at all possible, if you're in the location, go and view it, because you can very, very often come unstuck. Because if you buy it online, even if some of the auctioneers grade it, some of them don't, if you're taking a punt, it can be a real gamble. I've done it. I've did it a couple of years ago with a company, an auction house up north. There was no way I was going to travel to, you know, wherever it was, Wakefield, I can't remember, but it was a long way up, and my friend alerted me to it, and I looked. And it was that morning. It was actually live. So I clicked on. It was all sorts of things I like. And I thought, heavens, what do I do here? But it was in the back of Beyond. So I thought, I wonder how many people have gone up there to view this auction. So I quickly logged on. I missed the first 20, 30 lots. And I started bidding, which was kind of, I found myself thinking, I shouldn't be doing this because I can't see. I can quickly look at the pictures. You can't see a lot from pictures. And I was trying to zoom in, and I was trying to keep up with the auction going live, and I could hear it, and I could hear hammers going down, and I was panicking a bit, and I was thinking, oh, I really want this. This is a really good lot. There's some krautrock in here, and there's all this, and there's prog, and I'm like, oh, hang on a minute, I could be buying these. These aren't going for a lot of money. So I took a chance, and I spent quite a lot of money, and to my amazement, when it all arrived, it was all in really good condition. Then I started cursing that I didn't buy more because there was the opportunity to buy loads more. And I thought, ah, oh, I didn't buy on those because I didn't want to. And so you end up sort of thinking, great, I should have bought more. But then on the other side of the coin, it could have all turned up and it could have all been battered. So I think the biggest bit of advice is do your research before you bid on them. Don't gamble like I did too much. Because you can come unstuck. I've even been to an auction house in the past where I viewed something and I pointed out to the auctioneer before the auction that the record was badly warped. It was quite a rarity. I'm not going to name the auction house. It wasn't yours, Simon. It was way up north. Way up north when I happened to be up there for something else and I went to this auction house. And I pointed this really bad warp on this quite rare record worth several hundred pound. And I said, you've graded this as excellent condition. It's got a really bad edge warp on it. You can't sell it. And he said, my goodness, yes, you're right. It has got a really bad edge warp. Thanks for letting me know. I sat down for the auction to watch it live and bid on a few things. And that record was still in the auction. And it sold. It sold online. So he said to me he was going to take it out, but he left it in there. So you've got to be really careful about what you're buying. You can get very lucky with auctions. You can become very unlucky. So, yeah, do your research on what you're buying. And if you can, go along and view the auctions on the viewing days beforehand.
Good advice, Jamie. Solid, solid, good advice. Yeah, thank you for that.
That is the way forward. Now, I'm steering you towards your previous rant earlier in the episode. So we're going back to Brits and Ray and, carefully. Another one that we have to be careful of. So she's done well. Now, somebody comes in. We were talking about giving advice. Picture this, Jamie. Somebody comes into your shop. They've got an open mind. They walk in and they say, last month, I bought rumors from you. And you go, you did. And they say, but you're the man who knows. Can you steer me in the direction of something else? The reason I asked this question, years ago, I used to go to a record shop in Windsor called Revolution Records. And the guy there knew that I was a Motorhead, Hawkwind, that sort of individual in my late mid-teens. And he used to say to me, Harry, if you edge it this way, why don't you listen to this or that and try something new? So several of the people who were asking questions were, we want to listen to other stuff, but where would you nudge them first?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. Can I just say, having never listened to Ray, never even listened to a note of Ray, I shouldn't judge. It could be very, very good. I don't know. So it's wrong of me to say, oh, God, you know, they're just doing that to sell tons of records.
I think your argument's with the hype, not with the artist.
It's with the hype. It's with the record company's hype and the fact that people buy into it.
I'm protecting you from abuse there, but I think it's the hype you don't like.
It's the hype. Interesting one. I do. I get an awful lot of people asking for recommendations. Sometimes it's, I know nothing about jazz. Where should I start? So you'll kind of break it all down into subgenres. And do you like vocal jazz? Do you like swing? Do you like big band? Do you like fusion? Do you like free jazz? Probably not. And then you can steer them in a certain direction. Interestingly, I had a couple, an older couple in. This is really interesting because they came in and they said, have you got any Joni Mitchell? Now, I'm a huge Joni Mitchell fan. She's wonderful. And I said, yes, I said, I've got a few over here. They wanted it on CD initially. They said, we've heard, hence we've been told by the media, by public consensus, that the album I should listen to first is Blue by Joni Mitchell, early 70s. A very introspective, confessional singer-songwriter, quite dark album. Masterpiece, in my opinion, and lots of other writers would say, yeah, fantastic record, great thing to start with. So they gladly handed over £6 for the CD. Off they went. Came back a week later and stood in front of the counter and I said, oh, back again. How did you get on with Blue, Joni Mitchell? They looked at me, they both said, we hated it. I said, oh, we absolutely hated it. It's so depressing. It's just, we were willing it to end. It was utterly depressing. And I said, well, okay, I get that, because it is quite a dark record. And if you're not that way inclined musically to listen to it, it might be a little bit of a downer. I said, well, okay, we'll try this one. This, my personal Joni Mitchell favourite, was Caught and Spark, which is an album 2 years after. It's much more up-tempo, much more of a joyous thing. It's jazzy. It's a fabulous record. They bought that one. A week later, they came back. I said, how did you get on with that one? we absolutely love it. Have you got any more like this? So it's really difficult to recommend things to people because sometimes they absolutely love it. Other times they come back and say, And I had a guy in literally a week ago saying, I'm learning jazz guitar. Have you got a good jazz guitar album? So I flicked through the racks. I gave him various selections. And I'm a big fan of a jazz guitarist who passed away recently called Larry Coryell. And there was, I got to that one and he liked the cover. And I said, this is probably not the best Coryell album to start with, but it is very guitar. It's a little bit freeform in places, late 60s. I'll give that one a go. He came back last Saturday and he said, that Larry Coryell album, he said, and I thought he was going to say, I'm bringing it back. It's awful. It's free jazz and it's horrid. And he said, I absolutely can't stop playing it. He said, I want to emulate every note on it. I absolutely love it. Have you got any more? So he took another Larry Coryell CD. He said, I'm going to end up buying all of the stuff this guy's ever done. He said, because I absolutely love it. So you can't, that's the beautiful thing about music is everybody sees something different, not just in styles, but and not just in artists. You know, it can be one record to another by the same artist or genre, and something somebody gets something out of, somebody, another one is just like, bleh. And it's really strange. But yeah, I do recommend a lot of things, but I always give a sort of bit of a sort of proviso with it that, hey, look, this is just my my opinion. And sometimes it works really well. And people come back and say, I need more of that. Steer me in that direction. I've got some customers that have been coming in for years and half their collection has been just because I keep steering them in a certain direction. So, yeah, it's good. It's good that I can do that. And it's also good when I go in other record shops and they do it to me.
Yeah. And you know what? That's why independent record stores like Rooster Records, that is their USP over the internet, over online, over streaming, over all the rest of it, is being able to have that interaction with somebody. Yeah. You know, it'd be nice if you were a little more passionate about it, Jamie. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Be nice if your heart was in it, if you could really put your heart into it. No, that's what I mean. To speak to somebody with such a wide range of knowledge of all of these different genres and be able to have that to and fro, that discussion, that sounding. I think that's what's so amazing about the independent record stores like yours up and down the country. So, yeah, a little more passion though next time, Jamie.
I'll try, Simon. I'll try.
One more question. I know Simon's going to end on a high, but I have one more question from Greg. And I get shot if we don't ask these questions because they message them in.
Greg's.
No, Greg, not Greg's.
Oh,
no. I know that would sound like that's the question I'd ask.
That sounds like a Harry question. You would have, yeah. Harry, yeah. A question from Greg's.
Greg, he thinks, and this ties in with what Simon was saying, he feels, do you think, I wonder whether Greg is thinking of opening one, that there will be a rise in the number of independent record stores, or have you seen any indication that that is happening? Because you're out there and you're in the field, aren't you? So you know what's what.
Yeah, interesting. Obviously, the cost of running a record shop is quite horrific at times because it's the cost of running any retail shop. So they've never been sort of right in the centre of towns. They've always been kind of slightly out on the periphery. But that's where people like to see them. I think that's where people expect to see them. But there was an interesting book that came out called The Last Shop Standing about, when would that have come out? 7-8 years ago, by a guy called Graham Jones, who works for one of the record distributors. Lovely chap. And he wrote this book and it became a film. It actually became a film that's done the rounds, Last Shop Standing. It played in, I watched it at the Exeter Picture House and I did a question and answer thing with the producer after. With the audience, which was really fun. But that book at that time was detailing the demise of record stores and the green shoots of recovery. And I think in that book he was giving some sort of idea of the sheer number of record shops that have closed in the previous sort of 10 years. But there was kind of some sort of hope that they may have just turned the tide, but it was called Last Shop Standing because there was a real risk in the 90s and early 2000s that we were literally going to become extinct. So since then, there has been a huge resurgence in the interest of vinyl and physical music. So I think the numbers are constantly going up. The only thing I think that can affect it is the cost of having a physical store, which is a struggle for any retail in any any corner of the market. So that really is the only thing that can stop it. And I think with the way that vinyl sales are, people do love going into a shop to buy them. I mean, you can still buy online. I think online streaming and everything has proved that it's not going to wipe it out, because although millions of people stream millions of records every day, it's not going to replace physical music anytime soon. So I think that fear has gone away. I think it's only the cost of physically running a store that's going to halt the resurgence in record stores. Yeah, absolutely.
There is an increase. Fantastic, isn't it, really?
That's brilliant.
An increase, definitely, yeah.
Is there a next wave? Is 8-track your next wave? Is reel to reel? You mentioned that.
Every now and then I do get asked for 8-tracks.
Do you?
I've got a carrier bag in the back room. I wheel out every now and then. Probably all mouldy. But I don't know if there is, because let's be honest, there's only been really 3 formats. Here's one for you. I get an awful lot of people at the moment asking for 78s.
What?
Do you know what 78s are? You're not old enough.
No, we know what 78s are.
Oh, we know.
I could take you to several skips where we may have put quite a few 78s. That's my worry.
Our house clearances have taught us very much what 78s are.
Oh,
and first of all, I know they're heavy.
I'm going to panic now, because he's now going to say, by the way, Harry, they're worth an absolute fortune.
Do you know what? I went to an auction house some years ago in Reading, buying records, as you might. But I went with a friend, and before the record, the LP auction came up, which was in sort of lot 300 onwards or something. And I said to my friend, I said, what about all this stuff early in the day? He said, oh, you won't want to be interested in that. He said, it's all 78s. I went, oh, right, okay. He said, but we'll watch it, he said, because it'll blow your mind. And I went, why? And so we got a coffee and we stood there and the auction started. And everybody in the auction sitting down was probably in their 70s or beyond. And the auctioneer, who's one of the guys that I saw on the TV yesterday, one of the auction flog it programs, he was there and they started these 78s and they were going through the roof. Lot 14, Bakelite, blah 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 blah, and some of them were classical, some of them were jazz, some of them were blues, and I'm looking and my jaw is hitting the floor, because they're going 200 300 400 500. It's a 78. And I was standing there in amazement. And my mate was just looking at me, giving this most knowing look, because he'd been there before when they'd done it. And he was just like going, told you so. Now you're going to look at your 78s in your back room, aren't you? He said. And I could not believe my eyes. These 78s were selling for a fortune. At one point, the auctioneer said, suddenly stopped the auction, looked at one of the punters who'd fallen asleep, and said, pay attention, Jeremy. And he sort of came to and said, 300. And it was like something off of a comedy show. It was just bizarre. But these things were going for serious money. So then I thought, wow, I really, because I've always known there's money in 78s, and I rock and roll stuff and things like that, some of it sells for good money. But now I get an awful lot of people coming in of all generations, especially not just older generations, saying, have you got any 78s? I've got quite a lot of them. And I bring them out, because you can't put them in the racks. They break, they're fragile, they're 10-inch, they're horrendous. They've got no covers. But you bring them out, and if they're not broken, they go through them all, and they end up with this pile, and they say, how much for all of these? And then you have to look them all up. And some of them are quite expensive. So, yeah. Wow, there's life in 78s.
This has been the most costly podcast I've ever been on.
cassettes and 78s that I've been throwing away for 7 months, 6 years, or whatever it is now.
Oh dear, Jamie, we always love talking to you. It's absolutely fantastic. But I have just got one final question before we've got to go. And it is the most popular question. I'm lying, because I do that. Any update on Adele?
Last known, she was festering away in Las Vegas, where she belongs.
Because we know that you are a lifelong fan. We just needed to bring Adele in at the last cast just to give you a last rant before we let you go.
On that hugely positive note, Jamie, thank you so much. We're hugely appreciative of the fact that you spent extra time with us this evening to record a podcast. It's late at night, everybody, or late in podcast land, and we are hugely grateful. Thank you, my friend. It's very kind of you.
No problem. Most enjoyable. Any time. I look forward to the next one. I'll try not to rant so much on the next one.
It's your rants that make it a good pod. We love it.
Thank you, Jamie. Take care of yourself, and we'll see you again soon.
No problem, guys. Take care.
One thing I now know, Simon, is that we've been throwing away a load of things that are actually worth loads of money. So that's great. I'm holding my head in my hands.
I've got the super glue out. I've got the broken 78s. I'm slowly piecing them together. If you buy my broken 78s, you may be skipping from artist to artist, but they kind of fit together. I don't know. These markets moving. And as for the children buying cassettes, what are you trying to do to me? Oh, where's that Walkman?
Well, I love the fact that Jamie goes, I don't know what they're playing them on. That was my biggest revelation. So they just want to own them so they could be part of the gang.
They're buying them and walking around with them. I don't understand it. But I swear to God, I'm investing in BIC. That's what I'm doing. I reckon I've spotted the next trend. BIC Biros is the way forward. That's got to be a penny share if ever I've heard one.
Do you know what? Joking aside, what a cracking episode. That's why he gets asked for his opinion on the vinyl market by loads and loads of people. He's recognised as one of the country's experts. Do go and visit Rooster Records in Exeter, because, as he says, he will chat to you and he will point you in the right direction. Sometimes he does talk as though he's not going to do that, I think it would be fair to say. But actually, he's so passionate about what he does for a living. He does want to spread the word and he will point you and he will help you. But I mean, Record Store Day. One, neither of us had ever heard of it. I like the fact he's got proper opinions. He's not frightened of saying, well, it doesn't work anymore because it's been hijacked.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think he is all for the purity of music, different genres, the independence, and it not like every other business on this planet being taken over by the massive few, rather than allowing that independent shop, high street, evolve. It's just everything is just being smashed. And to have Jamie on and talk passionately about his magnificent shop in the middle of Exeter that does what high street should do, which is allow people to flourish as business people and bring their knowledge to the high street and share it with everybody. And he did that beautifully on this podcast, I thought. He's just a legend.
Be another year, we'll have him back again. And I can't wait to see what we've thrown away that's actually worth a fortune that time. Oh, dear me.
They're just very expensive podcasts, aren't they, for us? Very expensive.
They are. This spreading the word on various topics is costing us a fortune. Right, mate, what do you want our listeners to do, the age-old question?
Support the high street. Support your independent record retailers.
Yes, we can do that. What we really want them to do is like, subscribe and review, if you wish, and spread the word about The Gavel and The Gabble. We're doing our level best to spread the word about all things auctions and associated subjects. Give us a listen and tell your mates.
And you know what? If you have got any questions you want to pose at Harry or future guests you'd like to see or hear from, ping us a email.
Yeah. there something. You go. Info at the gavel and gabble at gmail.com. There you go.
Oh, excellent. Did I get that right? Brilliant. Fantastic.
No, it's ping us no, hang email. On. Ping that out. Ping us an email. It's thegavelandthegabble@gmail.com. There you go. Or you can reach us on any of our socials.
I'm sure David will edit that out so that you don't look like a right plump.
David's going to pick a phone out of that. Right. Nice job. Thank you, David. Simon, see you soon, mate.
Keep as much of that in as you can, David.